My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Colin Jeffries and Eric Reed host a great podcast called the Rethink Marketing Podcast. Colin, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Well, Jason, on the Rethink Marketing Podcast, we unpack the myths, misconceptions, and flat-out lies of marketing and sales. Our listeners tell us that we help bring different perspectives to common business growth, wisdom, and advice.
That's great. Where can people subscribe?
They can subscribe at RethinkMarketingPodcast.com or listen on their favorite podcast platform, including MarketingPodcasts.net.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Maddie Osman.
I think that what it comes down to is ultimately making sure that you're keeping the human in mind throughout and sort of putting them on a pedestal, because at the end of the day, the human is the one that has money to buy, at least right now. The robot is a medium by which you reach the human. And so there are ways that you can effectively reach both, but then ultimately knowing that all these efforts are really so that the right human sees it at the right time.
Maddie Osman is a digital native with a decade-long devotion to creating engaging, accessible, and relevant content. After teaching herself web design at age 11, she found her true passion in content creation, learning the intricacies while transitioning from technical to creative SEO marketer. Maddie's journey from freelance writer to founder and CEO of The Blogsmith yielded numerous insights to share about content creation for enterprise B2B technology brands. Her efforts earned her a spot in BuzzSumo's Top 100 Content Creators and The Right Life's 100 Best Websites for Writers. Maddie has spoken for audiences at WordCamp US, SearchCon, and Denver Startup Week. She's also the author of the new book, Writing for Humans and Robots, The New Rules of Content Style. Maddie, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks so much for having me again.
I know, this is a repeat visit. I said, you know, we recently celebrated 400 episodes, and we don't always do repeats, but you roll over 400, and there's only so many smart marketers out there. So, but I am thrilled to have you back on, not only to talk about your new book, but just I'm always fascinated by your approach, because your bio suggests this a bit in there, but I think that sometimes we have this divide up between analytical SEO type things and creative content that's engaging. So how do you kind of straddle these two camps that, well, probably shouldn't be two camps? how do you think through that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like two sides of a coin. They are yin and yang, you know, they belong together. They feed off each other in a way. And I think that when I decided that I loved content maybe more than the technical side, it was actually back in Iowa when I went to school there and I was working in the student life marketing and design department. And it was my boss, Ben Lewis. I think you know him too.
Yes.
He had given me an opportunity to work on the Student Life blog and some of the social media channels. And I just had so much fun with it, you know, and I really love the technical side of things too. I love coding. I love solving problems. I love working through a tough issue. That's a different side of my brain though. It's just like, again, it's kind of two sides of the same coin almost. But I think kind of what I'd inferred in that bio is I just eventually decided I liked content more. I think that it's kind of like my book, you know, the coding side, it's like the robotic side, and the content side is more of that opportunity to connect with humans.
Well, creating engaging content applies to books as well. And there are certainly, you know, countless digital marketing, SEO content books out there. Totally. But you kind of have me at the title. I love the idea of writing for humans and robots because it's both fun to say, fun to think about, fun cover. But that's what we're doing today. So, right. So what's the elevator pitch on how one can successfully write for both humans and robots?
Sure. Yeah. I think that what it comes down to is ultimately making sure that you're keeping the human in mind throughout and sort of putting them on a pedestal, because at the end of the day, the human is the one that has money to buy, at least right now. The robot is more or less a user. It is a medium by which you reach the human. And so there are ways that you can effectively reach both. For the robot, we're thinking about things like indexation and being very descriptive and making it clear by adding signals like the right keywords or even things like schema markup to tell people what the nature of the content is. But then ultimately, knowing that all these efforts are really so that the right human sees it at the right time.
So speaking of time and the right time, and you talked about both of those, but what is there in considering the human and the robot, where do you start with that? Is there something that comes first? Is it SEO first? Is it robot first or human first?
I think maybe it's robot first, at least in terms of our standard writing process at the Blogsmith. It's kind of at the same time, but where we start is usually the keyword research process. I guess before that is really the topic ideation and deciding, you know, what gaps might exist with existing content, what still needs to be created. We always think about the different audiences people are trying to serve, the different stages of the buyer's journey that they need content for. So for like a new brand, we're thinking about how do we get decent coverage across these different things if they maybe don't have anything in place yet. For most brands, you know, they already have a lot of content. They already have a lot of these pieces in place. But when it comes to optimizing for both or sort of the path forward, it starts with that topic ideation. It then goes to the research phase where we are keeping search data in mind and figuring out how to phrase things, how to approach structure in terms of what that search data tells us. But then I think when you go to kind of the outline and the draft and those later steps where you are kind of finalizing your language and your approach, that's when the human comes back into it. So maybe it's you start with the human with the topic, you think about the robots in terms of your structure and even some of your specific words that you're going to use and things like that. But then it comes back to the human when you flesh it out and, you know, give it that language that really is to benefit the human.
I think, you know, just like the yin and yang, the push and pull, the back and forth of that, I think is a really important dynamic, because a lot of times we get either or this first, even though robots first does make me smile because I'm just a sci-fi nerd and it makes me think of Terminator like things. But in talking about your book, the other thing that is really appealing is this idea of it being an elements of style type book for content creators. Because I know I have my elements of style up on the shelf whenever I'm talking about it. I always make a point of bringing it along because I think it's such a great prop because it's such a tiny book.
Totally.
But it has great impact. And I just think about writing something like that couldn't be easy because, I mean, that was a tiny book. How do you get the most important stuff in there? How did you decide what should go in an elements for content creators?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think what you're saying about the elements of style, the fact that it's a small book, it's like, imagine how much they must have cut out, right?
Yeah.
To get to that point.
Well, that's like a lesson in and of itself, too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, sometimes the shortest content pieces take the most words that you eventually get through. Yeah. To answer your question, so I wrote this book at the beginning of the pandemic, maybe, you know, several months in, and I just got it in my head. I wanted to write something. And then I got it in my head that the thing that I was going to write was going to be something that could help my team, something that would essentially expand on an existing style guide that we had created to create online content for our clients, which is very much reminiscent of, to some extent, based on AP style, which I'm sure a lot of listeners are familiar with. And for those who aren't, it's basically news journalism, you know, what print and to some extent online journalists would use to make decisions about things like headings and links and word choice and all those interesting different ways that you can communicate with people. And so I started writing this book based on our style guide. And what I thought would be useful was taking some of the rules that we created and then adding more context. So here's what to do, here's what not to do. And a lot of the examples in the book and in our style guide are based off of actual edits that we've made to make language more clear, to, you know, better position our clients and the word choice we use, whatever, all those things. And so in deciding what to go into the book, it's really quite parallel to the Blogsmith style guide, which I can send you a link for as well, Nick, because we have a like an external facing version of that that people might be interested to poke through. But it was the title of the book and then the structure of the different chapters didn't actually come about until maybe a year or so later. And I was basically just looking through and trying to make sense of like all this different content I had written and trying to find sort of the common thread. And in the back of my head, I knew that there was that SEO aspect to it, the keyword driven, you know, search driven approach. But it wasn't until I had really finished the chapters and then kind of re-looked through my structure that I came up with the Writing for Humans and Robots and kind of splitting it into this part's for humans, this part's for robots, and then this is where it all kind of comes together at the end.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Colin Jeffries and Eric Reed host a great podcast called the Rethink Marketing Podcast. Colin, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Well, Jason, on the Rethink Marketing Podcast, we unpack the myths, misconceptions, and flat-out lies of marketing and sales. Our listeners tell us that we help bring different perspectives to common business growth, wisdom, and advice.
That's great. Where can people subscribe?
They can subscribe at RethinkMarketingPodcast.com or listen on their favorite podcast platform, including MarketingPodcasts.net.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. So I love that story about the behind the scenes of how the book came about. One, you know, some people just made sourdough bread during the pandemic, but you went and had to show everyone up with a whole book. But, you know, this is a little meta because we're in the marketing business, but I think for listeners out there, for content creators, I also love the roots of that story found in, because you have a business, the Blogsmith, you are helping and creating. I mean, you can think of, I mean, it is true for folks in our business. A book is a form of macro content, but taking something like that, that had its roots in internal utility, both for you, for customers, I think that that's really, really important too, and has lessons that you can take. Even if you're not putting a book together, you might find, boy, we're sharing this type of info a lot. I think that that is something to look for as well, that others can do. So, and as we talk about the brand need, the brand layer of this, it seems like a topic that we come to frequently here on the show is brand voice. So, where does writing for humans and robots intersect with the development of a consistent brand voice across channels?
I'm so glad you asked, Nick. So one of my favorite chapters to write, and one that I specifically put at the very beginning of the book, is about word choice. And within this chapter about word choice, we do talk a little bit about things like voice and tone. And I think that's where you can take your style guide or whatever your approach to creating content is and make it truly unique and, maybe more important, distinctly yours. You can use voice, or you could use rules of voice and tone to help define your brand, so that when people read it, whether they see really any visuals, any mention of your brand specifically, that they know that it's yours because it follows kind of the rules of the voice of tone you set. And so one resource that has really stuck with me, and I think that anybody listening that's curious should dig in deeper after this, but the Nielsen Norman Group published this article a while back about what their definition of a voice and tone spectrum is. And essentially it breaks down into four continuums: funny versus serious, formal versus casual, respectful versus irreverent, and enthusiastic versus matter of fact. And so one thing the Blogsmith does is, in our client intake form, we have every client go through and define for their brand where they stand on this continuum, whether it's to the extreme of either of those words, or maybe it's dead center, or maybe it's, you know, very close to being one, but not quite. And I think that's a really important first step, is to just sit down and think about what that means for your brand. And then I think the very next step that you should take that's also pretty important is diving in a little bit deeper, because those words, that continuum, does not capture nuance. So say, for example, you're Wendy's and you're snarky, and you're, you know, a little sarcastic, that's not quite funny or serious. And so defining the more specific adjectives that describe your brand personality, I think, is just as important as defining voice of tone or tone of voice, but really you should be doing both.
You know, I am going to acknowledge that I could get up on a soapbox and or go down a rabbit hole, whichever metaphor one prefers, on Wendy's, just because I am not a huge fan of it. Certainly got attention, but I don't think it's consistent with who the rest of their brand was or is.
Fair.
It got them headlines, but
it did.
But that's Nick over there on the soapbox. We're gonna leave him over there. And I guess I've just split my personality, which is another problem that I'll have to talk about with someone. But I love those intake questions too, because I think brand voice, why we talk about it so much, is it's so important.
It is.
Writing for humans and robots is important because it's at the heart of everything, and how we do that as a brand is a huge overlay into this work. But I think, and it's important to communicate, because it used to just be that your agency was, you know, responsible for brand voice. They did something, but now you have people creating videos. You have people that are sharing updates, different people across different social networks. Right. Voice is so important. And I think distilling it can be a scary blank page to look at. So
100%.
Having something on that page, some easy boxes to check, is great at getting folks going. To that point of sharing this content, how have you seen brand voice and style shared internally in a successful manner?
That's a good question. I think to some extent, beyond having a good intake process that asks really pointed questions, it's also a matter of sharing with the people that are creating content for you, whether that's writers, video producers, what have you, examples, and not just a link without commentary, but to give some direction in terms of, you know, we really like this because this brand voice aspect was shown in this way, kind of explaining why it embodies that tone of voice or, you know, brand specific detail, and giving, I mean, as many examples as you can. So having good documentation, and that goes beyond examples. I think it goes beyond an intake form. You know, it's things like just giving a lot of detail in terms of like the audience you're going after. And I'm trying to think of some of the other things that we ask our clients for, but just being an open book, I guess, is really what it comes down to, and being communicative and giving feedback if it's not exactly what you wanted, but not locking that stuff down. I have worked with some clients who, for example, have had a style guide behind the scenes and then wouldn't share it with us when we were creating written content for them. And so we essentially had to rebuild it. And it's like, why would you have a style guide if you weren't going to share it with the people you're collaborating with?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
the head scratcher.
It is. So the book's got 22 chapters, and like the elements of style, is action-packed, info-packed. As we see the end of our interview in sight, what's something that you find that content creators aren't thinking enough about that they should be?
Oh, good question. One thing that comes to mind is formatting, and that's chapter, I think, 3 or 4 in my book. It's 4. I think, so a lot of people, I think, are worried right now about GPT-3 tools, AI coming for the writers' jobs, you know, for creators' jobs in general. And one thing I always tell people is robots, they can figure a lot out. They will probably surpass us at one point. At this point, I'm not too concerned because, for one, they can't art direct the pieces that they're writing content for, and they can't format them. And I think that formatting is such an essential part of a great reader experience. And that includes visuals to some extent. It's also things like white space and using bullet lists and being consistent with parallelism if you're, you know, talking about similar things. And there's just so much to it that I don't think of any robot right now, especially any of these like GPT-3 tools, are sophisticated enough to figure out. And yeah, I mean, maybe it's a worry for the future. I'm just not worried about it now. And so I think that formatting is something that writers especially can become better students of figuring out, you know, how to do that well. And then if you do, I think that that stands out when you're submitting pieces, when you're trying to get new jobs and things like that. And when, you know, you're ultimately trying to reach readers. So I think that's a big thing. And I think something that that reminds me of similarly in another chapter in my book is about links. A lot of people get stuck in kind of bad link practices where it's like, click here. But it's like, but what am I going to see on the other side of it? And I think that creating a great reader expectation for humans and robots involves setting expectations at really every stage. And so that starts with like the SEO title, the meta description before you read the article. It's, you know, having like a table of contents when you do click through so that people know what to expect and where they can kind of skim to find an answer. And there's a lot of nuance, I think, with creating a great reader experience, but I think formatting covers a lot of it.
These are great points, and I love what you said, but I did get Terminator scared again about the robots getting smart and overtaking us. So, Maddie, you've made me smile a lot during our conversation. It is now the time when I get to ask you for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Sure. Yeah, I've been thinking about this. So the one that I want to put in the spotlight here today is a brand called Matcha Bar. I'm a huge fan of matcha lattes at Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, or wherever. And, you know, it is an expensive habit if I were to go daily. So Matcha Bar is a company that sources and sells their own matcha. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's inexpensive, but it's high quality and it's really delicious. And their branding is just really fun and like modern. And like their emails, especially, I would say, is a really great example of branding because they're sharing different recipes. They're promoting different kind of like baristas they work with that stock their products. And they do a really great job of upselling and things like that and, you know, trying to get you on a subscription. And so anyway, they totally got me.
I love it. And the expensive habit that comes up every now and then here on the on the smile worthy brands, but the smiles at least help in supporting that.
Exactly.
Maddie, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So theblogsmith.com covers the agency side of things. You can see some of the content we've worked on, some of our sort of philosophies around that. My book has a website, writingforhumansandrobots.com. So if you want to check that out, you can download the first chapter for free, which is the one about word choice, which is my favorite chapter. And the book is available on Amazon as of July 18th. It is available now for pre-order on Kindle only, but on the 18th, it'll be available for print as well. And then lastly, if you want to chat about this episode or content, style, whatever, I'm probably most active on Twitter, which is at Maddie Osman.
All right. And we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Maddie, thanks for being on brand with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Colin Jeffries and Eric Reed host a great podcast called the Rethink Marketing Podcast. Colin, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Well, Jason, on the Rethink Marketing Podcast, we unpack the myths, misconceptions, and flat-out lies of marketing and sales. Our listeners tell us that we help bring different perspectives to common business growth, wisdom, and advice.
That's great. Where can people subscribe?
They can subscribe at RethinkMarketingPodcast.com or listen on their favorite podcast platform, including MarketingPodcasts.net.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit MarketingPodcasts.net.